Chapter 9. How even the holiest thoughts obstruct rather than help contemplative work. So then, you must suppress the sharp intrusions of your thoughts that inevitably come when you sit down to do the blind work of contemplation. You must defeat them, or they'll defeat you. Here's why. If you're not careful, you will think you're resting in this darkness, with nothing in your mind but God, until you look and see that your mind is actually not occupied in this darkness, but is watching a clear picture of something associated with God, which is less than He is. When that happens, this attribute is above you and between you and your God. So no matter how sacred or pleasant these lucid images are, let go of them. Let me tell you something. For your soul to be healthy, it most needs a blind stirring of love for God alone. When your secret love beats on the cloud of unknowing, it pleases God and the heavenly community more than anything else, and benefits you and all of your friends and acquaintances, both living and dead. This purest loving feeling is also better for you than anything else. It's even better than having the eye of your soul opened during contemplation to a vision of the angels and the saints, or your being allowed to hear the joyful singing of those living in heaven. Do not be surprised. Once you experience the truth of my words, you'll understand. When grace helps you grasp this fact, you'll agree with me. You'll never see anything very clearly in this life, but you can certainly grope your way toward God. In love and longing, then, enter the cloud. What I mean is, let God's love draw you in to Him. His kindness will teach you how to forget everything else. Consider this. If the simplest thought rises, unasked, in your mind, distracting you, taking you away from God, in will and understanding, and weakening your ability to taste the fruit of His love, how much more will you be stymied if you're willing to cultivate thoughts during the work of contemplation? And if your contemplation of a particular saint or of any other purely spiritual topic presents obstacles to your work, how much worse will the interruption be if your mind dwells on someone that you know, or on some material possession or other worldly concern? Having good, pure thoughts pop into your head spontaneously or deliberately is not evil. I never meant that. God forbid if anyone thought I did. No, I mean that these ideas, though wholly commendable, will get in the way of your praying contemplatively. They hurt more than they help during this work. When you are seeking God, you will not rest until you rest in Him. The imperfect meditation on one of His saints or His angels will not satisfy. Chapter 10. How to tell which thoughts are sinful and which are mortal or venial. Not every thought is alike, however. Sometimes, out of the blue, a naked thought of someone you know or of something worldly will press on your will and understanding. And although this thought is no sin, but is merely the consequence of the original sin that you inherited and must be dealt with, and even though baptism has cleansed you of its guilt, you are still responsible for striking down these thoughts as quickly as they come. If you don't, your weak human nature is likely to succumb to them, as your secular heart remembers the good experiences and the delights in their pleasure a second time, or recalls the bad experiences and gives in to resentment, complaining inside again. For worldly men and women living in mortal sin, entertaining such thoughts can be deadly. For you and all others who have honestly renounced the world, publicly or privately, to live a devout life, fastening your secular heart on these thoughts is less serious, because you don't encourage them to stay. Long ago, you grounded and rooted your intent in God, choosing to be ruled not by your own will, but by the wisdom of your mentors. But if you leave these thoughts alone there, you might as well be gluing them to your spiritual heart, which is your will, and then the attachment becomes a deadly sin. For example, if you find yourself obsessing on someone, or on some physical injury, or on some painful conversation, you risk becoming a bitter person obsessed with revenge, which is the sin of anger. If you let your soul feel total contempt and loathing for someone, or if you're always insulting and censuring them in your mind, you're living with envy. If you give in to a feeling of malaise and exhaustion, that's laziness. On the other hand, if you find yourself entertaining ideas so pleasant that you could rest in them forever, only to realize that these thoughts are all about your own natural goodness, accomplishments, intellect, talents, position, or beauty, this is pride. And if you dwell on your wealth and what you're own or want to own them, that's greed. If you're preoccupied with lots and lots of food and drink and only the best will do, you know gluttony. And if you're seduced by inordinate love of giving or receiving flattery and by a deep-seated need to be liked or by sexual pleasure, this is lust.